It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Yannakko's here. Renee Ritchie's here. We got a great big show for you. Renee's had the HomePod for a week, his unreview, and all the details you'd want to know about the HomePod coming up. Plus, a look at Apple's amazing Q1 2017? Anyway, its last quarterly results are pretty good, but we'll talk about the bad points too. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 596, recorded Tuesday, February 6th, 2018. The pod comes home. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Go to texture.com/twit and start your free trial today. And by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use cloud accounting software for small business owners. Make this year your most productive year yet. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Renee Ritchie is here from iMore.com in his new studio. I see it. Finally. Is that a stone wall behind you? That's pretty.
Yeah, it's like slate, I think.
I like that.
And there's a river out there, but you can't tell because
I would just a little tip. I'd get a little close to the wall, get everything else out of the shot, have that wall be your backdrop. That looks good.
I'm gonna try to set that up for next time. I'm on like a little jury-rigged kitchen table.
Yeah.
Nothing. Everything is cardboard, mirrors, and gum tape.
It's like the original Don and Drew podcast they did in their kitchen on TV trays with microphones supported by wire hangers twisted into.
Back in my day, Laporte.
That's how we did it, and then we liked it. And Andy Yannakko's here, the Chicago Sun-Times, CWOB.com.
Andy. Yeah, we'll be populating the background a little bit more as we finish. But
I love it that both of you get new studios at the same time.
Yeah, we should coordinate next time, Andy.
We should do a podcast on like rebooting your entire network, rebooting your entire audio setup. When you don't have 10 years worth of accumulated, well, you've got this kind of speaker here, you got this kind of projector there. Now you have to decide you really have to go A or B.
Your review, or you call it an unreview of the HomePod, emerged today along with Neelai Patel and Joanna Stern. Joanna likened it to the bottom half of a sesame bagel compared to a everything bagel.
She only knows New York bagels, Leo, so that can be forgiven.
Not Montreal bagels, not the same.
No. See, I have my little friend here.
I think, yeah. Oh, you got it. You've had it for a week when you wrote the review.
Almost a week.
So one thing I learned from Neelai Patel's article is that Apple has a materials department, a soft materials department that made the wrapper for the HomePod.
The acoustically transparent cloth mesh.
And there's a cloth cord even.
Yeah, I can hold it up. I hope this is more resilient than the lightning cords and the MagSafe cords, because then I'll want it everywhere.
I know. It's really beautiful. It's hardwired, though, into the back of the HomePod. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. So you can't just buy it here and then flip it to South African power.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Renee.
Yeah.
I think the rubber cord. The standards for cords are wonderful.
Did your hamster get to that? What the heck?
No, just life, atmosphere, air got to it.
It was a hard winter in Boston land, Leo, and Andy had to struggle to survive.
So my, summary of the reviews I've read so far, including yours, Renee, is it sounds really good.
It sounds really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it really does. There's a lot of technology here. And you think that, Apple's not a speaker company, but they've been slowly and quietly accumulating a ton of speaker talent over the last few years. And they've added all their computational talent, the same thing that let them make portrait mode on iPhone, let them do this acoustic modeling in rooms and build out this system. And they said this project has been going on for 6 years. Neelai and myself and some other people got to tour their giant secret sound lab, which was astonishing in its size and the tools and stuff they had there. And they deliberately created it to be able to make a 3D sound stage just from one one speaker, and it just, it really punches above its weight. It's pretty cool to listen to.
So was this why you were in Cupertino? Was for this tour? Yeah. So you and Jim Dalrymple has the article and pictures on the loop of it. So tell us about this. This is the anechoic chamber that they use to test. And of course, every speaker company has one of these.
So I went in with some other analysts who had done those kind of tours before. They said it was very similar, although it was on a scale that they'd never seen before. Like, there were more rooms, and those rooms were bigger and had more stuff in them. Yeah. And I think that's what happens when you have Apple's budget.
Yeah, as we'll learn later in the show, Apple is on a scale that no other company is on.
Totally. And so there was one room that, it was a room within a room that was being suspended, and there was a wire mesh floor that you're not allowed to jump on as a trampoline. I learned that very quickly. And it has just cardboard acoustic. Sometimes there was cardboard acoustic tiling. Sometimes there was foam acoustic tiling. And they had these huge loop arrays of speakers and microphones so they could beam stuff at the HomePod, pull stuff out of the HomePod, and just little HomePods in the middle of this whole room. And what was really cool is they had the iPhone team, and they have a whole iPhone vibration team whose only job it is to make sure the iPhone doesn't buzz or make low frequency sounds or do other things to disturb you, and to make sure that no matter where you put the headset on your ear, it sort of tries to beamform the sound from the speaker into the position that you're holding it. And they brought it in so that if you were asleep and there was no sound, you wouldn't hear any buzzes or vibrations or anything from HomePod, or you wouldn't hear any sort of noise distortions. And they went from room to room. They had a bunch of Apple employees who were testing it, and they got acoustic models back from them. Then they built a room that was the average of all the different environments that it was in, and they could tweak that to sort of figure out what it was like with ambient noise. And they had a room that was made out of concrete and steel, feet and feet of concrete and steel, that isolated all noise down to -2 decibels. And when they closed that door, it was just the most unnatural sort of feeling in the world. And they're using that to test sort of like noise coming out of the device. It was all super interesting.
Boy, after seeing all that, you'd be hard pressed to not think this thing sounded better than anything else. But does it really? I mean, yeah, seriously, can you put that out of your mind that they did all that and listen to it? Here's one of my concerns. It's very easy, and everybody does this. You know, there's what we haven't seen yet is the graph of frequency response, which we used to see. You know, stereo review, every time there's a new system, they would have from 20 hertz to 20K. You know, the frequency response, and you want a flat frequency response if you want an accurate speaker. But as JBL learned early on, and many others, Bose, nobody wants a flat speaker. You want a speaker that's tweaked to sound better, which often means little bumps in the equalizer at certain places. The problem with doing that is that it sounds better on some kinds of music and not on other kinds of music. And that's one problem with a lot of modern day speakers, is that they sound great with modern pop music, but you, Andy, put them on your, you know, Donna Demaro
thing on opera,
and it's not going to sound as good. And that's tricky. Now, I'd be interested. Apple might be smart enough. They're putting enough power in this thing. It's got the brains of an iPhone 6 to know what kind of music's playing and to change even the frequency curve. So does it sound fine across the board? Did you do a curve? Do you know what its curve is?
So I'm the opposite of an audiophile. And I was approaching this like, would an idiot like me actually even notice a difference compared to different speakers? But they did explain as part of the tour that they made sure they did everything in those rooms to make it absolutely scientifically perfect. So be that sort of that neutral speaker.
But you don't really want that, I think.
No. So then they handed it off to the team of fussy audiophiles at Apple and the people who are artistic about sound, and they tuned it for human beings.
Is there a way in the settings to say what the frequency response is?
Not that I've seen. And it is continuously modeling. So it senses for any change in the room, sense changes in volume and remodulate everything so that the bass doesn't get deformed if it's too low or the volume is too high. So it's continuously analyzing everything about itself and all the reverberation and echoes and everything to make sure it sounds good. So I don't know specifically that it's adjusting for kind of music, but it is always adjusting for whatever metrics it can pull out of the environment.
Here's, just for eye candy while we talk about it, iJustine unboxing her HomePod. And probably she's not conscious of this, but I noted she's not only wearing a Series 3 Apple Watch, but also a slave shackle bracelet. So she's got kind of the both worlds in there somehow. It's bigger than I thought, or maybe she's smaller than I thought. I don't know. It could be either one. Nicely boxed as usual. Beautiful cable normaled into the speaker, which is usually not a good idea, because if it frays or breaks, you have to bring it to Apple to fix. Or Burke could fix it if you have a Burke. round Apple sticker in there. So did you play it on a variety of music, Renee?
Yeah, I asked it to play a bunch. It starts off when you set it up, it asks you to ask for music right away because you don't have to do any sort of true play tuning, or you put the little speaker in the room and try to find this
sweet
spot.
By the way, let's look at that because she's showing the manual, which is a simple trifold like most modern manuals. But the setup is really cool.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So it asks you to ask for a song, and then it tries to pick a song based on its understanding of music that you've liked in the past. And as soon as it starts playing that song, it starts detecting the acoustics in the room, and
wow.
Then it does all its self-tuning. And that takes between like 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 seconds. And it has an accelerometer in it. So anytime you move it, it'll automatically rerun that.
No,
there's no separate.
Cool.
There's no separate audio run or there's no like to go through.
Right.
It just does it on its own.
I also note that it pairs instantly, just like the AirPods do. When you open up when you put the phone near it,
yeah,
it just pops up. So you I think you'd have to have an iPhone or iPad, right, to use this?
Yeah, you absolutely do. I have the whole setup. I put it up on youtube.com/imorevideo. But you have an iPhone or iPad. The little AirPods-like interface comes up, and you just tap your way through it. And there's a few choices to make. And it's smart, too. Like, if you have accessibility turned on in your phone, it'll automatically enable accessibility or touch accommodations or any of the other accessibility features on the HomePod as it's setting it up. If you have Siri set to male American or female British, it'll copy that over for you while it's setting it up.
Let me go to your iMore review because I want to show your setting up of the HomePod instead of hers.
Well, mine is just the setup, so you don't have to sit through the unboxing. I did a separate one just for the setup.
Yeah, nice.
But it works. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to ask: when you select your first thing for it to play, is the genre going to influence how it sets up the device? Like, this is going to be tuned towards folk acoustic as opposed to ear splitting metal.
No, I don't. I mean, I asked it to play a podcast first because, of course, I did. But
so it's tuning to. That's probably the wrong thing, right?
No, totally. But then as you play more human music, like proper stuff,
so it continues to adjust.
Moving. Yeah, if it needs to, and as it moves around or as the room changes, like if it's in the corner of a bookcase, it knows that compared to if it's on against a wall, compared to if it's in the middle of the room, it senses all those differences in this environment. And if it's in the middle of a room, for example, it'll use those 7 tweeters to send sound 360 degrees around. It's hard to think of it in terms of like stereo or 5.1. It definitely takes the mix into account. It always wants to represent what the artist wanted to do with the song. But then it takes that information and uses that to play sound in the room as best it can. And if it's against a wall, it'll bounce stuff off the wall to get the same sort of effect, to do the center versus the ambient placement.
So Renee, in his usual overachiever mode, wrote 10,000 words and a podcast and multiple videos. So you really have, is this the setup video in here? This is the unboxing?
If you go halfway through, it'll start the setup.
Yeah. See, that's the look that I like with the slate wall behind you. I like that.
That's what I'm going to have for the pod. I actually have an adapter to make that camera work with
perfect.
It's
beautiful.
Skype,
so there's that little trifold again.
Yeah.
But, it's nice that's all you need. Use this instead of your stereo? I mean, is it that much better?
One thing I was going to point out, too, is it makes this little tone when you first start setting it up that is the same thing as the pattern on an Apple Watch or iPhone when you set it up or the code you type in for an Apple TV.
Oh,
so it just knows that it's pairing to that device and you don't have to do anything else about it.
It's asking where are you putting it in the house?
If you have HomeKit set up, it'll ask you what room you're putting it in.
Got
and
it.
That way, if you say turn off the lights, it knows you mean the lights in that room. You can say turn off all the lights if you really want all the lights, but it's aware of which HomeKit room it's in, for example.
Because, of course, Apple wants you to have one for every room.
Well, it's also useful for security. So, for example, you can say, I want to let anybody AirPlay to it. I want to only let people who are on my network, which means you've shared your Wi-Fi password with them and you trust them. Or I only want to share it with people who I've shared my HomeKit home with, which is generally only your family. And that prevents like Jim Dalrymple driving up and streaming Ozzy Osbourne to you in the middle of the night.
Which he would. If he could, he would.
He totally would. Yeah. He wouldn't come back to Canada to do it. But yeah, no, he totally would.
Hi, Renee. That's cute.
and it says, it says like, you can't tell, but I'm smiling. Like it does all these little sort of, it's very human. I mean, like that's the one thing that I think Siri and Amazon get really right in that they make it almost like a character that you want to talk with. And I get that Google is like, it's a Star Trek computer. I find that a character is just more relatable. And someone was asking me, like, they find it very uncomfortable to talk to it. But I think if you think about it, like Gem and Synergy, or Michael Knight and Kit, once it has a personality, it becomes more approachable to you.
It looks like you found a new friend, Renee.
I have a Sonos. I don't have it set up now, but I have a Sonos home theater system, and I've been using it for years. I have like seven Sonos speakers by now.
That's a fair comparison, yeah.
And it sounds unmistakably, even to my non-audiophile ears, unmistakably better than Sonos. There was an audiophile on Reddit who said it was about 20% better. I don't know what that means, but I can hear that it's cleaner, it's crisper. It sounds fresher and brighter to me.
Does the bass? Yeah, I could hear the brightness on it, but how about the bass?
The bass is good. The only thing that I find weird about the bass is I'm used to having a Sonos sub, and you know that's big and boom, and it rocks the floor. Yeah. And Apple went out of their way to make this not like it sits on the shelf, and it's not supposed to knock itself off the shelf. Yeah,
it can't.
So I do miss that. But if I didn't have Sonos, I would get this immediately. And even though I have Sonos, when AirPlay 2 comes out, I would strongly consider, I'm a nerd, I'm going to do this anyway, but I would strongly consider a paired match of HomePods instead of a Sonos Theater. I just wish Apple had a dedicated soundbar mode that if I wanted to, I want to say, just right now AirPlay is great. It's sticky. So you pair it to your Apple TV. It'll keep doing AirPlay. If you ask questions, it'll pause what you're watching, answer the question. It'll say play, pause, all those things. But if you do anything else with it, if you do a different AirPlay stream or you ask for Apple Music, you then have to go on and repair it. And it's just swipe, swipe, click. It's not hard, but it's annoying enough that I wish I could just say, dedicate this HomePod to the TV. I know what I'm doing. Pretend it's a soundbar.
Right. Now, Siri's built in. Is it the full Siri or is it a limited Siri?
Siri is still, and this is one of my biggest frustrations, that Siri is still completely inconsistent across platforms. Like the Mac can't do HomeKit for no particular reason that I can figure out. I mean, maybe there's a reason. I just can't figure out what it is. It has the best Siri functionality right now for music. I think that's filtering into the iPhone as well. So it has deep music knowledge, and it has what I would actually call second generation AI for music. And that we talked about this previously, but right now a lot of devices are good at, Leo said, play Black Sabbath, and they get better and better at knowing that you said Black Sabbath, at understanding your pronunciation. Right. But they haven't really gotten better at knowing that you like Black Sabbath. You want to hear that more, and you want to hear music that's similar to that more. And that's what HomePod does. It starts building up a library of what you ask it to play for and what you like, and then starts suggesting music. Or if you just say play music, it'll try to pick music that it thinks you like. And that's a really important step for this. But in other areas, like SiriKit right now is limited to only third-party messaging apps like WhatsApp, note apps like Evernote, and to-do apps like Things. There's no integration with SiriKit for restaurants or for ride hailing. And maybe that's just Apple trying to figure out the completely voice-only interface without a screen for it. And maybe we'll get that at WWDC. But also, like, audio SiriKit still isn't there. So you can't do native Spotify or native Audible. Or native Overcast, if that's what you want to do. And I think that's the area where Apple really has to pick up
the pace. You can send and read messages, add reminders, create notes. Can you make phone calls?
You can't initiate a phone call, but you can use it like once you have a phone call, it becomes an audio source. Like you could switch to AirPods or switch to speakerphone. You can switch to HomePod.
And it has and you can use its mic for the phone
call?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I tried it with Serenity earlier. She said it was across the room. She said it sounded big and boomy, but it wasn't bad for across the room.
Well, it's got, how many mics? Three, four? It's an array.
Six
array mics. Yeah. It's got seven tweeters going around
seven
the bottom.
Seven tweeters, six mics, and then an incursion, something, woofer.
high excursion.
Woofer. High excursion. Yeah, woofer.
Which sounds like it's going on trips, but it's just lots of
I mics. Only went by the audio nerds who, like, I was in the analyst group for this because, like, the HomePod's not coming
out
in Canada.
Fun.
That's why I didn't do a
review.
Must
have been fun to hang out with those guys.
Yeah, but they were all, like, so, like, they'd been on this tour from eight different vendors, you know, and they'd seen all this stuff. And watching them sort of nerd out over the technology, because they had a disassembled HomePod in front of us.
Oh, interesting.
And we could, like, stick up the pieces and check it out. And they were just nerding out, too. And you know when the nerds nerd out that you're doing something
Was
fun.
It the consensus of the audiophiles in the group that this did, in fact, live up to its hype?
Yeah, I think even the biggest critics I've seen, like even people who aren't happy with Siri or other aspects of it, like in Neil A. Patel's review, too, he said he's a huge speaker nerd. Yeah, he said it sounded great. And he's the kind of guy who would have a vacuum tube amplifier on his desk.
He does. But, in fact, he said he has an analog stereo system. In his video, which is way overproduced, I'm just jealous.
Looks like a Netflix show, I know.
Yeah. He actually does, I think, a very good thing, which is he plays the comparison. He has all the same music playing with all these different speakers. So you can actually listen, although playing it on my MacBook, they all sounded the same. But he says, wear headphones.
That. Yeah, at WWDC, they did it with the Play 3 and with the Echo. And then this last week, they did it with the Google Max. the Sonos One and the new Echo. And I think Sonos is just a little bit, just in terms of speaker quality, it's a little bit behind Apple. The Google Max and the Echo, I don't think should be in the same category. They're close. More like speakers that make sound. Yeah.
Not even close.
And the Google Max is huge, but it doesn't sound anywhere nearly as good as Sonos or HomePod.
Well, I ordered mine. I'll get it Friday along with the other folks who've ordered them. And $350. It's not cheap. On the other hand, if it's really a good speaker, $350 is not expensive, frankly, for a good speaker. It's not stereo, which, you know, some people.
So that is super confusing to me. And I spent a lot of time asking about it. And Apple is using these terms, I think, in a really bad way. I think it would do them. I think it just does a disservice to the information out there. When they mean it's mono, they mean there's one speaker. When they mean it's stereo, they mean there's two speakers. That's nothing to do with the audio coming out of those speakers. They're just using.
Well, but if I play a stereo song on it, am I going to hear left and right? No.
Yes, it's going to take the left and right channels. It's going to do the center first, and then it's going to beam the left and right channels either straight out or bounce them off walls.
So it might sound like stereo?
Yeah, it's weird though, because you can actually walk around it. And like, so if you walk behind it, it might be the opposite channels if you have it like in the middle of the room. Oh. But it tries to put stuff in the right space.
Oh, I can't wait
and
to
some
hear
people
that.
Find that off-putting because they said like in a concert, you don't get to get up and walk around an orchestra. You just don't do that.
You're well, you would if you could.
Set. Yeah, totally. and when you have two of them, it doesn't make it stereo in like the left right channel sense. It just because there's two sources now, it can better model the room and it can.
Oh, interesting.
And you can add three or four when you.
You have to re-understand what stereo means now.
I mean, they're using a classic definition that I think nobody understands, and that led to a lot of confusion over.
Well, normally you wouldn't have what you want is separation between left and right, and normally with a single speaker you can't. But they're doing something so different now. With tuning and aiming, and they're aiming at the walls. Remember, Bose very famously 30, 40 years ago had their Bose 901 speakers were direct reflecting. They said you need to put them against a wall in a corner because some of the sound is intentionally reflected off the back wall for spatial. Well, this is that in spades now. They can go 360 degrees around the speaker.
The only analogy I could make is it's like portrait mode where it takes a camera that has no native ability to do bokeh or anything like that. And through computational power and machine learning lets it do that. And this is a small device that has no business being able to do spatial audio and through sheer will of technology and programming, get it to do much more than the atoms themselves are capable of. And I think this is just the beginning of all these companies sort of making all these products computational.
So in the week you've had it, have you listened to a variety of music? Is there one that sounds better than the others or should we just ignore anything you have to say because you're not a stereophile?
Again, no. I mean, like, it just sounds really good. And I like...
It sounds really good.
I don't have favorites. I like variety. Like, my favorite is variety, a bunch of different things. So I've listened to jazz and hip-hop and classic rock. Okay. I have stations for everything. And when I've been watching the videos, people have been asking for stuff and I've been asking to play it. And so far, I haven't found anything that sounds bad. Again, I'm not the best judge, so I wait for people like you or people who are really good at audio.
I want Andy to listen to Donna Damaro and tell us what it sounds like. That's what I'm looking for.
She's in the room, Leo. She's in the room.
Oh, I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, it could, you know, this is an example of how Apple could really reinvent what a sound system is. And that's the hope, is that they're doing that and they're not hyping it. You know, it's the question of hype versus hope. They could be hyping this beyond its capabilities, or it sounds like it's the latter. They're doing enough computationally here with an A8 chip.
And it's just the beginning. I mean, I'm sure Google's going to follow fast with this technology because their machine learning is fabulous, and the other company, Sonos, is going to keep
building. It's not exactly machine learning. I mean, it kind of goes back to the binaural sound and also, it's not exactly what others have done so far with soundbars, which is simulate a sound stage either. It sounds like it's something even newer than that. I don't know. I like the phrase computational audio.
Yeah.
Just like really, computational photography. It's a new thing.
I'm super excited about that.
I like the fact that there's the entire definition of a sound system is being changed, not even necessarily through a HomePod, but the idea that it doesn't even seem to make as big a difference, as big a deal that there's no distinct left and right speaker, because how many places in your house are you going to do you listen to music by sitting in a chair that's in the sweet spot within a stereo field, as opposed to I just want to be able to be in this room enjoying my life, reading a book or getting up to get coffee or walking over to my desk. But there's always really good audio in the room. I think that these really good Bluetooth speakers that have been taking over for the past 3 or 4 years have really helped us change our attitude this isn't the one altar of stereo speakers right. in the good living room that you're not allowed to sit in. This is the not necessarily as good as those big speakers, but plenty good. But it's exactly where you need it to be.
Well, and it could be better. I mean, the kitchen's a good example. You're listening to music in the kitchen. You're moving around as you cook and serve. If it fills the room, right, Renee? I mean, it's not a question.
Yeah, Dalrymple and I tried. Like, we spent about 5 minutes searching for dead spots, and we couldn't find any. Yeah. And it was a relatively big room.
Yeah. Not merely dead spots, but the sound is big enough so it doesn't.
Yeah.
And does it sound like it's coming from that speaker over there?
The only time I felt weird about it is when I synced it to the television and then put it behind me and I stood between the television
that would
and
be
the speaker.
Weird.
Because that's not what I'm used to for that experience to sound like. Yeah, so that was weird. But otherwise, I haven't even noticed. And I think, like, when they explained the design goal, again, it started like 6 years ago, and their only question was, can we make a speaker that you can put anywhere, that is super easy to set up, and that sounds great no matter where you put it?
Yep.
And that was a super big challenge. And they had to, you know, make a prototype, get it signed off by executives, get, you know, the go-ahead to make the product. But I think that's what they've achieved. If you don't have anything, and if you're involved in the Apple ecosystem, you can just go buy one of these, stick it almost anywhere that you want, press a couple buttons on your iPhone, it'll be set up and playing really, really good sounding music no matter where you put it. And then you can pick it up and change rooms, take it other places, put it on your patio, stick it in your kitchen, whatever, and it'll still automatically sound great wherever you put it.
I know they're very disciplined at Apple, and I would doubt that they would in any way give you any hints, but I wonder if they're thinking of making bigger ones.
I know we're small. I know some people ask for smaller ones that they could put like in a child's room or their room or take on the camper. I would love for there to be a home bar that would be like a dedicated sound bar for a television. There's some really cool Dolby Atmos stuff that's being done by Yamaha in soundbar formats. So I think there's a lot like iPod started off with just one thing that was incredibly limited. And look what that became. So I always have high hopes that we're at the beginning of something and not an ending.
Yeah, I was surprised that it didn't work. That the HomePod didn't work well. It didn't work what I consider to be really well with Apple TV. Neelai's review was speaking about how it only interacts with it as an AirPlay device, and if you then use it for something else, then you have to go back into Apple TV and remind it to please use the HomePod again as a default device. I would love if the next product that they made in this line were sort of like an Apple TV directed thing that was understands that you're going to be putting this underneath or next or around a TV set and make sure it's the best. It uses that computational audio for soundtracks and for explosions and stuff like that.
I've been using it like that for a week just as a Apple TV speaker, and it's fine. It's sticky. Like, it'll stay attached unless you use a different AirPlay device or you ask it to do something. And then you have to go swipe, three swipes and a click to make it pair again. But it'd be nice if you could just say leave it paired. And one thing I forgot is, like, as much as people are saying it's an Apple-only thing, most of HTC's devices have supported AirPlay for a while now. Like, the HTC 11 supports it as well, and the 10 did. And also DoubleTwist, and there's a variety of Android apps. So if you have people in your family and you think it's a deal breaker that you don't have AirPlay, there's a chance that they might at least have AirPlay compatibility. So you can check into that.
It does look like the HomePod is going to be – I'm now excited about getting one. I'm encouraged by the very, very positive reviews. It's hard to imagine a device that small providing good sound. It's funny because you'd expect Apple to make computer speakers.
This team, I think one of the first things we saw was the iPad Pro, where it had the four speakers and you could turn it and it would maintain.
But I would like a little pair of these with a subwoofer for my iMac.
Totally. I mean, the iMac Pro has got another one of their products in it. That team works on the iPad
good.
Pro, the iMac Pro speakers.
Yeah,
too.
It sounds. Oh, did they really? Oh, because it sounds pretty good. I mean, it's not as good as like my audio engines, but it's good enough.
No, totally.
And I think its microphone is very good. They're using an Array mic in there too.
And the nice thing with AirPlay 2 when it finally ships is that Sonos said they'll support it and there'll be third parties that support it. So you could just add this in. Like, I don't want to replace the Sonos. It's expensive. But I could just add this in and then choose where I want the audio to go, either the Sonos speakers.
Although you have to think that this is going to replace Sonos ultimately. I mean,
they don't have – so I always think that the advantage is to companies that have secondary, tertiary, you know, all these different sources of income. It's really hard to be Palm and be in mobile, but it's really easy to be Apple or Samsung or Microsoft and be in mobile.
Yeah. When you say supports, okay, I got to understand this. So It supports the Apple TV in that you can have the TV play to it. Can you play yes. it? You wouldn't want to play it to the TV.
No, it only goes. It can control. Like you can do pause, play, and things like that. But that's okay. about it.
So it's a TV speaker in that
yes.
sense, and it supports AirPlay in the sense that you can AirPlay to it from an AirPlay compatible device.
Yes,
and it will play the sound. So if I wanted to listen to my audiobooks, for instance, yep. I would just get my iPhone 10, launch Audible, and then tell it to play through the HomePod.
Absolutely.
Not and the end AirPlay of the world, comes, I got to say.
It'll be multi-room and multi-device, yeah. and that'll be nice.
No Spotify, though, at launch. Only Apple Music. In fact, I subscribe to Apple Music just so, because I'm getting the HomePod.
Which yeah, is so I get the feeling, Apple's I know a plan. Lot of people, well, and I think a lot of people talked about lock-in. My sense is that it took so much work for them to build out what they wanted to do with this product. And Apple Music, they had complete access to everything about it, the catalog, the metadata, the file format, how they're going to stream it. They could have absolute control to make it work exactly the way they want it. And now they've put the product out. And I think it wouldn't surprise me if at WWDC they go, hey, Siri kit for audio. Now everybody's invited. But it's not uncommon for like iPhone 1 or Apple TV 1 to be very dedicated to Apple until they figure out all the problems they have with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure this is lock-in per se. I think that remains to be seen. I agree with all of what Renee's been saying. As I said before, particularly about like the Apple Watch, if they get the hardware right, that's the hardest thing to completely rethink or radically alter. As long as it's a good container for the software you intend to pour into it for the next 1, 2, or 3 years, that's fine. So as long as Apple gains our trust by rolling out new features that we're expecting today over the next year, that's fine. At the same time, I don't think it would have been difficult to make it work as a Bluetooth device, a Bluetooth audio device. I don't think it would have been that difficult to support Spotify at launch, but maybe it's because they want that to happen. They want Spotify to provide that functionality through a standard API that they intend to offer to all developers at WWDC. So, I mean, and also as much as I'm saying, I don't think this is lock-in. We're still waiting for support for anything other than an iPhone on the Apple Watch, even though it would really be a natural fit, a natural progression from it doesn't matter what kind of computer you have, you can have an iPhone. It doesn't matter what kind of computer you have, you can have an iPod. But the Apple Watch, you have to have an iPhone. So I think it remains to be seen, but I don't think I wouldn't be so quick to say that this is all about lock-in.
Some of it depends on how I feel on any given day. My current belief is number one reason is the experience isn't seamless, like Bluetooth experience is bad or the experience isn't everything Apple wants it to be. But also it doesn't hurt. Number two reason, it doesn't hurt that it encourages lock-in. That's not a negative, and you know, Apple can see that as gravy, let's say. So, but I think the number one reason, I'm going to give them credit that the number one reason is really that it's just not as good a user experience.
Well, you can also look at Apple TV supports TV programming from all different vendors now. AirPods let you stream over Bluetooth. I think they make the decision on a product by product basis. Yeah. And I think like for Apple Watch, they're going to drive it to be an independent device, and they just don't want to put it in the
world. Don't get me wrong. If Steve Jobs were still there, I would say it's absolutely ecosystem lock-in, job 1, 2, 3, 4,
but then
and
Phil
5.
And Eddie, that's one of my favorite Steve Jobs stories, where he said, no, we're not going to support Windows. And they said, yes, we are, Steve. Right. And he goes, no, we're not. And he goes, forget it. You guys do it, and if you fail, it's your problem.
Right.
And they did it. You know. Yep. So like he wasn't afraid to be overruled by people who he thought had good opinions.
Exactly. I think nowadays, you know, it's a little different. It used to be Apple existed as a second citizen in the ecosystem. So they had to work with Windows and everything else. I mean, that was nowadays, I'm even falling into this Apple ecosystem lock-in. It's just easier if you just give up and use and just give up and give in to Apple. And it's just
like
easier.
Selfishly, like our, if they
like
put
our
the
forefathers
the
in Lexington, like our forefathers in Boston and Lexington and Concord said, you know what? Stamp back, schmamp decked, you know.
You know,
I think selfishly for Apple, it's way easier to introduce this product and have people review it based on Apple Music and AirPlay, where they have like again complete control over it, than just to say, oh, the Spotify integration is kind of sucky and the Bluetooth kept fading out, and then that dominates sort of the reviews. This way, they can add those features later. People already have it, and the new Spotify stuff is still a little shaky. They have to fix that, but it doesn't dominate the discussion about the product.
Employees of Apple, you're lucky. You're getting the HomePod for half price. Now I'm jealous. 50% disc. Now I want to work for Apple. Nathan Olivares-Giles, come on. Share that discount with us, huh? 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 This is according to Mark Gurman. Good news for Apple employees. HomePod 50% off for the next 2 months. They did this for the Apple Watch, too. You know, it makes sense with the Apple Watch. You want your employees to be wearing the Apple Watch. Doing it for the HomePod is just nice.
Makes them into better ambassadors too. I think that they would have to wear the watch for a while, and to be someone who loves this product and starts their day by putting this on or using it, that will help them explain to customers why it's so great. I think the HomePod's the other thing like that. It's like, especially when people walk into an Apple store and I think there were still a couple other Bluetooth speakers out there, and say, well, why do I, you know, I got an Anker Unce speaker and it works very, very well. It's like, well, okay, this is the same thing as an Unce speaker. As the name implies.
Our show today, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We have the Apple earnings, and we have Jason Snell's colorful graphs. I'm so glad Jason does.
Are they
this.
Six-colored?
They were six-colored, of course, from sixcolors.com. Our show today brought to you by the absolute first thing. When I hit the home button on my iPad, for almost always the first thing I launch, Texture. Texture is, it's one of those... It's funny, you know, I think there's a go-to app for everybody that you just, when you turn on your phone, some people it's maybe Facebook or Twitter. For me, it's Texture, because I love Texture. I love the magazines. Texture is the only app that offers unlimited access to over 200 premium magazines for an amazingly low monthly price. That includes Time, Atlantic, the PC Magazine, the New Yorker. What I really like about it, McLean's for you Canadians, what I really like about it is there's magazines like McLean's I probably would never subscribe to, and I certainly never see on the newsstand. What's a newsstand? I never even see a newsstand anymore. But I love that it's there, and I can read it. Their curation's fantastic. Stories just for you. These are stories that, I don't know, for some reason, they're recommending the Oprah magazine article, What Defines You? For me, I don't, you know, what is that? Why is that? Is it your job, your hometown, your love of 70s soft rock? Oh, they know me so well. Now, look, when you open it up, it's every page in the newsstand magazines. But I have to say, it's much more beautiful than the magazine, the print version. You can zoom in on images. So if you love photography, National Geographic or Shutterbug, the ability to zoom in on an image and see every pixel, so much better than the print version. Easier to read, too, because, of course, the text can also zoom. So it's, you know, big text if you want. You can turn the pages just like you can on a magazine. Even the ads are there. I know some people will say, well, I don't want the ads, but that doesn't, you know, it's just, it's easy to swipe by. But sometimes you read Vogue, I think half the magazine is about the ads, right? It's not just about the editorial. You get them all in here in Texture. I am a big, big fan. Let's go back to the front page here. New and noteworthy stories, daily news from Reuters and others. Hugh Grant settles phone hacking claim against newspaper. Oh, interesting. I'll have to read that tomorrow. Kathy Griffin on her exile from Hollywood. Will Lady Bird make Academy Award history? As we get closer to the Academy Awards, I find I'm reading more of the gossip magazines, Entertainment Weekly and People Magazine. The Dow, you following what happened last week on the stock market? Fortune, Reuters, Money, McLean's, AARP, the magazine. You know, I don't subscribe to it because I wouldn't want to admit to it, but I actually like the AARP magazine. And so I can read it secretly. In fact, a lot of these magazines I'm reading in Texture might be too embarrassed to subscribe to them. And I love it that I don't have the coffee table clutter. I don't have the guilt of subscribing to a magazine. Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson on finding your joy. This is straight from Fast Company. I love it. I favorite the magazines I want, and they automatically are downloaded. So when I get on the airplane, those magazines are there. I can read them anytime. All the most recent edition of Adweek, Consumer Reports, Dwell, Mother Jones, People, Rolling Stone, Sever, Shutterbug. These are just my magazines. The Hollywood Reporter, Atlantic, Sports Illustrated. Yes, we're talking about audio, sound, and vision. The great audio magazine, it's there. And what I love is when you click the table of by the way, this is another one where you want the ads, right? When you click the table of contents on Sound of Vision or any of these magazines, you go right to the article. See how much easier that is than reading an actual magazine? Right now, you could try Texture free, texture.com/twit. And if you want to continue, and I know you will, our listeners are going to get Texture for a great price. Less than the news. That's the newsstand price. Less than the subscription price. But even less than the texture price in some cases. $9.99 a month. Apple said Texture is one of the best apps of the year. You'll know why. It's the first app I go to every time I fire up my iPad or iPhone or Android device. Texture.com/twit. Start your free trial today. Texture, TEXTURE.com/twit. Thank you, Texture, for bringing such great content. You know what I did recently is I deleted Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, all the social stuff from my phone, so which was kind of my normal habit of going to on the phone. Now I go to Texture to catch up on the news and stuff, and my life is better. I'm happier. I'm not so grim. Boy's life. Yes, Jay, they have boy's life.
I'm jealous.
You can't get it up there?
No, I can absolutely get it. I'm so jealous that you're able to delete all those social apps.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm supposed to cover them, so I didn't cancel my accounts. I can, I have it on my computer. But not waking up in the middle of the night and firing up Twitter, my stomach is much happier. Twitter do you not find that Twitter just makes you angry sometimes?
I stopped going to the timeline. I only look at my mentions now.
Maybe that's the key. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes me angry. And Facebook is a little better now with their new, your friends and family feed, but
I just mute or delete anybody who's
maybe
putting
I should
stuff in your
do
timeline that you don't like.
Yeah,
I feel bad. I'm so Canadian. I feel bad about banning people.
I just found out, and this I found this out from Reddit. There is a law in British Columbia that just because you apologize to somebody for crashing into their car or stepping on their toes or breaking their arm is not an admission of guilt.
Huh.
You can't be held responsible just because you apologize. Because Canadians, it's reflexive.
Sorry, yeah.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
So sorry.
That does not count as an admission of guilt in Canada, at least in British Columbia. All right. Kudos to Jason Snell. He had this out that day, the day of Thursday, the earnings came out. Bottom line, record revenue, record profits once again.
Yep.
But all's not perfect, rainbow-shaped in the world of Apple. iPhone sales down 1% year over year. Mac sales down quarter over quarter.
So we don't know about those iPhone numbers because the people who did the math for the 13 versus 14 weeks, I think, said it was slightly up if you account for the time difference.
Slightly up.
They sold more units per second or something, given the amount of seconds.
Well, one thing we know for sure, revenue on iPhone is way up.
ASP, yeah, which is what we were talking about in terms of iPhone 10 mix.
Yeah. Did somebody do the ASP calculations to figure that out yet?
I don't know if they did or not. I haven't seen it, but they just knew that it was skewing towards the higher priced iPhone 8 Plus and iPhone 10 models.
So this is the quarterly sales, thanks to Jason, going back to 2012. And as you can see, I mean, the last few Q4s have been pretty darn good, beyond anything in 2012, 13, or 14.
They're running out of humans to sell them to. They're going to have to hope Elon finds Martians to increase them.
I can't, even though Q1 2017, they sold 78.2 million iPhones. Q1 2018, they sold 77.3 million iPhones. I can't say that that's a flop in any respect.
No.
Right, a little down. No.
Also, these weren't Apple's targets that they failed to hit. These are analysts' targets.
Right.
So
we don't care what analysts say. Four-quarter moving average iPhone units, 53.9 million.
That show a huge flaw in the system because Wall Street is really designed to promote growth, and once you have everything, where do you grow?
You can't grow farther. Well, but. I think nobody would question that Apple's a good stock buy, given that they now are repatriating their international money into America, and they're going to give most of that money back to stockholders through stock buybacks and dividends. Nobody's going to be a sad shareholder. Scooter X, who is our chat mod. Is it okay if I tell this story, Scooter X? I don't know. He is a shareholder, and he is going, February 18th? He's going to the shareholders meeting at the new Apple campus. So a few lucky shareholders won the lottery. He said he didn't get in the lottery and he was upset. He didn't get in. And then what did you complain about it? Did you tweet about it, Scooter X? Something happened. And somebody from Apple called and said, hey, we found an extra ticket. You want to go? So he's going. Nice. Nice, Apple. They must know that you're our chat mod. I think that's probably it.
They must be really confident about their stock performance if they're actually inviting cranky stockholders to be part of the meeting.
Year-over-year iPhone revenue change up 13%. Very, very good. Although, again, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean they sold more iPhones, just that they're making more money. iPad sales. Here's a bright spot. Look at the jump in iPad sales. It's year-over-year, quarter-to-quarter, even going back. You'd have to go back to 2016 to show better sales. And I'd have to credit that to the iPad Pro and maybe the $329 low-priced iPad. I don't know.
And also, some of them are starting to finally age out. Like, people are holding on to their iPad 2s for years and years. I think a lot of them finally upgraded with that new 9.7-inch.
I was hoping for better Mac sales because I, you know, I'm just prejudiced. I want the Mac to be a big part of their overall revenue. It's not close. Quarterly Mac sales down. It's actually the worst quarterly, worst Q1 sales they've had since 2014. Maybe that's because people hate those touchpads.
They also had no new Macs in the last quarter. Traditionally, they've had like a new iMac or something.
Oh, the iMac Pro came out in this quarter, didn't it? Yeah.
The iMac Pro did, but that's a very small part of sales. The new iMacs and the new MacBook Pros, which are most of their sales, all that came out in June.
Right. Here's the pie chart showing revenue by category. 70%. Wow. iPhone. 7% iPad, 8% Mac. Services continuously going up. It's now 10%. Probably most of that driven by App Store, right? Not Apple Music, not iCloud, App Store.
Right.
Other means what? The Apple TV,
Apple Watch,
AirPods, TV. All that stuff. Is Beats in this?
Beats headsets probably another.
Yeah.
I think they're another.
So other's not a big category compared to the rest, but
I mean, most companies would still give three of their executives children to have.
Yeah. I mean, we should point out that when we're talking total revenue for a 3-month period, we should emphasize, for 3 months was what, $80 billion?
83, I think.
And the quarterly profit, like the money they get to keep for 3 months, $20 billion. For 3 months. So you know, everybody's jumping up and down because Amazon made $1 billion. It's like, well.
You can basically hear Luke on the call. Like, we cannot print it fast enough, shareholders. Yeah. We try to make so much money. We have nowhere to put it.
It's kind of amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Kind of amazing. Total app and revenue is $59.8 million in this four-quarter moving average. Record-breaking. Record-breaking. Always in every way.
But still, every single chart, every single bar, it's iPhone,
yeah,
iPhone,
that's worrying.
iPhone.
Do you think that's worrying?
Google search, Amazon retail.
I think it would be really worrying in almost any other company. With Apple, people who, once they get someone into an iPhone, they stay got, either because they're absolutely delighted by whatever the next one is, or Apple just, some of the new iPhones are better received than the others, but they've never had one that got people so steamed that they started looking elsewhere at the Verizon store. So I would like to see them start creating really bigger pieces of the other pie, but that could be just prejudicial. If you took away the iPhone and just simply said here is a company that does everything but the iPhone, Apple would still be doing very, very well. So
plus, I think you nailed it. It is the flagship, but there are a lot of other products, and it brings you into the fold.
It's also an outlier. I don't think there's ever been, like, including companies that have monopoly control over fossil fuel resources, there's never been a product like it. It's just a complete outlier, and you're better off ignoring it. Like, it's great that we have it, but you're better off looking at Apple without that distortion. Yeah.
Ben Thompson, Stratechery, says Apple has entered middle age.
Well, I mean, is it really fun is it really okay to make fun of the Rings hairline? I don't know.
Actually, Ben Apple admits Park that he also in his middle age. Isn't this funny? This Wired cover from June 1997 with the multicolored, the rainbow colored apple and the covered in barbed wire and the word pray beneath it. Well, your prayers were heard, obviously. Apple's doing just fine.
Been okay 20 years.
Yeah. And he's talking about the HomePod strategy here. He says the strategy around the HomePod, at least from my perspective, far more fascinating than the device itself. He has one, apparently. He says, I guess he's talking about his Echo Dot. To get but he says, criticism of Apple Music when it launched was not a statement whether or not the service would be successful, but whether or not it was worth the trouble. Well, now HomePod is the answer. He says, I have to admit, I'm pretty impressed with Apple's foresight. Go ahead. You can encapsulate it, Renee.
Well, no, I just think he was referencing a Wall Street Journal article, which is based on analyst reports, and you can always take those with a huge grain of salt, but that Apple Music is on track to surpass Spotify in the right. U.S. market.
Do you think that's true?
Relatively soon. I mean, the U.S. market is relatively unique, and Apple has a huge deal. It's whenever you criticize something about a vendor, they always have service zero. Like, Siri is bad, but because it's the built-in one, every time someone opens an iPhone, Apple has a chance to make it better. Anytime they launch an iPhone, they have a chance to get another Apple Music subscriber. So the benefits of being a platform, you know, that's why Google and Apple and other companies are in this business. It just gives you such a huge leg up in terms of if you can make a good service, of getting people to use that service.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's significant that if they were to surpass Spotify in the United States, guess where Apple has the biggest percentage of phone users. It's going to be more interesting in the coming years when everybody, they've already sold Apple Music subscriptions to all the iPhone users, but now there are people in other countries as well that they have to go get. Spotify still has about twice the subscriber base as Apple Music. It's definitely worth considering that Apple Music has been around for not quite so long a time as Spotify, but I think it's also worth saying that Apple Music is also available on Android. But we got to make sure. I'm interested to see the numbers on how many Android people have switched to Apple Music. That's the one where there's no built-in advantage. There's, matter of fact, trying to overcome the lesser Google Music has an advantage on Android, but it's not necessarily built into every phone. It's something they still have to go and get. It works best with Android, but not the others. So there's a lot to really digest in that number.
My understanding is that Apple Music on Android is like, if you have five kids and one of them happens to have an Android phone, it's nice that your family plan works for them too. And it's sort of like the same thing with iMessage on Android. It's like, at a certain point, it's valuable for Apple's platform to have iMessage and to have Apple Music because it's a way of making more value for the phone, which is 70% of their income. But if those things ever become more valuable, like BBM arguably became more valuable as a platform than BlackBerry was, and they didn't do anything about it, and that's where you start to hit the risk.
Mm. And I don't think Apple is really caring whether they beat Spotify. I think that it's the ecosystem. It's the totality.
The best product for their customers.
Yeah. In fact, Ben says, you know, people misunderstand it. They say most commentary has assumed customer wants HomePod. Two, therefore, customer subscribes to Apple Music. Three, Apple profits. He says, no. The order is customer owns an iPhone, which is a great place to start. Because you have more of those than anything else. Customer subscribes to Apple Music because it's installed by default on their iPhone and it just works better. And three, as an Apple Music subscriber, customer only has one choice in smart speakers, HomePod, then profit. But I think it's even bigger than that. I mean, I think really this is the ecosystem as a whole. This is it's more and more it's clear the ecosystem play is working.
And also, as we talked about, Apple is running out of people to sell iPhones to. And if you can't sell more things, you've got to make the amount of money that you sell each thing for greater. And you can do that by increasing iPhone prices. But you can also do that by selling people Apple Music subscriptions and Apple TVs and HomePods to go along with it. That way, instead of getting more customers, you extract more money from each customer. And it's just one of the few ways that you can.
That's part of what disappoints me about Apple's overall way of doing business. I do think that they make choices based on what will create the best experience for the consumer, but I also think that just as sunk into bedrock is the idea of the best world for the users is for the user to only buy Apple products. That we're not going to build the best music service. We're going to build the best music service that works with everything else where we can control the end-to-end experience. The Apple Music app on Android is one of the most beautiful apps I have on my Android phone. So it shows that they can definitely suddenly translate an Apple aesthetic to another platform very, very well. So that's why it kind of bothers me if they decide to step out of the batter's box whenever they have an ability to prove that we're not just good at making things and we can control the whole world. We're okay to we can continue on our space exploration theme. We can build a Mars rover that just goes out there and deals with whatever it encounters, as opposed to we've got a Mars rover that works great so long as you operate it in the Mall of America and they never add any stores or turn off any of the water features.
But ultimately, I can't imagine Android's that important to Apple. If anything, what that app does is tells people, hey, you know, it's nice over here in the Apple world. Come on over. You see, this is a little taste, but if you really want the full experience, I mean, maybe
it's way more annoying with iMessage, because it really does having messages locked into iOS and macOS really denies the fact that this is a service that connects people. It connects you to your friends. It connects you to your relatives. If you look at the larger plan that Apple's pursuing, it connects you to the larger world of restaurants and navigation and payments and everything. And for them to say that it's not important to us that we connect all users to everybody that they might want to connect with, we are only interested in connecting them to other people who are making money for Apple, that's not a sign of a great company. I'm not saying that Apple's not a great company, but that's a box on the checklist that is left unchecked for Apple.
I just think they don't know how, like, it's not a business that they are either in or understand. Like, if you buy an iPhone, that pays for iMessage. But if you're using iMessage on Android, what pays for that? They're used to not running anything at a loss, and supporting, let's say, an additional 500 million users is a significant infrastructure and expense and development cost. And what would they do to monetize that? They're not going to run ads in between it like Instagram or something would. And Apple Pay is really needs that secure element. They don't have that on most Android. It would be such a fundamental shift in how Apple runs its business that I understand why they haven't leapt full bore into it.
Let me finish with Ben's thought, because he says Apple's in middle age, and he says that's not necessarily a negative. In short, it just doesn't make much sense to act like a young person with nothing to lose. One gets older. When circumstances and priorities change, one settles down, it's all inevitable. Keep in mind, I actually really love these last three paragraphs, so I'm going to read them if you don't mind. The swashbuckling Apple, the one led by Steve Jobs, not Tim Cook, that looms so large in everyone's imaginations, couldn't have had more different circumstances. Jobs is a product and execution genius. But in truth, we have no idea how he would have dealt with the strategy questions facing Cook. So, and he brings up this iTunes for Windows, as you did. It was, Andy, it was correct strategically as making HomePod exclusive to iOS devices. The former fits one's mental model of how a company should operate is a matter of circumstance, not principle. So it was for every Jobs decision. Expanding the iPod market with the Mini wasn't disrupting itself. It was a means of making more money. And an even starker example is that the iPhone cannibalizing oneself is a whole lot less impressive. When the cannibalizing product is a higher ASP and higher margins. This is to take nothing away from either decision, simply to note it's a lot easier to make decisions everyone loves when the overall market is growing. The fact of the matter is... Say again?
I think he's saying that because they thought they would make more money on the iPhone, it was easy to sort of cannibalize the iPod. But I think there's still inherent risk in that.
A lot
of companies are too afraid to make those choices.
He's saying it's not as courageous as it seems.
But I mean, you look at Microsoft and you see how afraid they were of cannibalizing Windows, like with things like Courier.
I think it's courageous. I mean, they didn't know it would have a higher margins. I mean, they knew it would have higher margins, but they didn't know it would sell better. So I think it's courageous. It's anytime you say, I'm going to make the next thing and it's going to cannibalize the old thing, that's a big deal for any company. That's a big jump.
Yeah. It's always, however, important to recognize the difference between Apple and all other companies. Microsoft has a huge problem that Apple doesn't have, where people can go anywhere to buy the hardware that runs Microsoft software. Apple, they know that if they want to they can bravely make a huge change to their Mac operating system, knowing that it's not as though the makers of Macintoshes that run older versions of the operating system can still run that stuff. They can still sell that hardware. No, because people are just like, you can't really buy a Power PC. You can have a Power PC or a 68030 based Mac if you want, but you're going to be stuck in 1996, 1997, and you won't be able to use Mac OS X. So there's so many interesting conversations to have about the way that these companies do business. They were very concerned about cannibalizing sales, and I think a bigger issue is just simple lack of imagination, lack of vision. But a lot of it is that if they decide to do something that is so radically different to all of these customers that are just want to sit down at a desk, turn on a computer, and do boring stuff that makes them money, it's not as though all these makers of PCs, not as though Dell and HP and everybody else is necessarily going to follow Microsoft into the future. They're going to be perfectly happy to say, oh, guess what? This still works great with a 2007 version of Windows that you know and love. So there's a lot of variables to coordinate here.
Last paragraph of the article, and I think this is absolutely right on. The fact of the matter is Apple under Cook is as strategically sound a company as there is. It makes sense to settle down. What that means for the long run, stability-driven growth or stagnation remains to be seen. I think that's what I've been saying all along.
Well, I think the knock there is that, you know, Apple under Tim Cook, for example, is super eager to embrace AR, and they're embracing AI in some ways, but other people would argue that they're not going all in on things like Siri the way that a company like Amazon is going in on Alexa. And you always have to pick and choose your battles, but you come from what you know and the kind of products you know. And Apple has been really good about it. They went from PCs to mobile. But will they be able to make the leap from mobile to ambient computing, for example? You never know until those sorts of things happen.
Yeah. Let's take a little break. Before we do, am I missing any other stories? There is an incoming call glitch on the iPhone 10. I've experienced it where the phone won't ring for 20 seconds or so. Apple says we're looking into it.
I've had that. I've also had where you can't swipe to answer it since like 1997, and I haven't had that.
Yeah. So
there's one thing, Yuli. The battery health stuff is in the latest beta. So you got the new beta.
You've
today,
got the new beta? All right.
Get the beta, and it tells you your max. My iPhone 10 is at 100% of maximum capacity and is running at peak performance. So
now,
I know that at least.
Tim implied that there would be a switch in there to turn off the slowdown. I guess you wouldn't know because you don't have an older phone.
Yeah, I'm going to install it on an older phone later. And this one is not rolled in Apple's advanced power management yet, so there's nothing to turn off.
Right, right.
But I'll try it on an older phone later today.
So we'll keep an eye on that. So it's interesting it's happening to you too. Yeah, on that iPhone 10 slow to ring issue.
I just thought I wasn't getting calls. I just thought
I
was voicemail directly.
Because other phones would ring, and then I wouldn't see it on the iPhone 10. I'm trying to answer, and there's nothing there.
And also the vibration on iPhone 10. I find the vibration, like, they're not – it's not quieter, but it's a different – like, it feels more horizontal where the older iPhones were more vertical. And I would hear them on the table going, brap, 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 even if I had the ringer off, where this one is more like, and I don't hear it as much. So, like, there's so many things going on. I thought I was just losing my mind for a while.
This is this article from 9 to 5 Max says that you can disable the battery throttling, and there is there's a little, you might be hard pressed to see it under the peak performance capability. There's a disable.
Yeah, mine
link.
Doesn't have that.
Yours doesn't have that. So it must be sensitive to the capacity. Yeah, when it's 100%, it doesn't show up.
Well, it's
up.
Also only some phones. It's only iPhone, iPhone SE, iPhone 6, iPhone 6S, and iPhone 7 right now that would have that.
Yeah. So in the three images, 9 to 5 Max shows, if the battery capacity is 100%, you're just going to see normal peak performance. If it's not, or it's an older phone, we're not sure exactly, but you'll see a disable button. Once you disable it, that's the image on the right that says this iPhone has experienced an unexpected shutdown because the battery was unable to deliver the necessary peak power. That's because you nitwit. No, I added that part. You have manually disabled performance management protections. So those are the three different screens you might see.
At least
they're
telling you that you have a shutdown, because I think a lot of people don't understand
the
choice.
What happened.
Like, it's not an informed choice. Yeah, once it happens and you're like, okay, now I know what I'm choosing between.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really am a strong believer that you always tell the pilot the operational status of his or her vehicle. And if there's something happening with your phone, don't say, well, we don't want to confuse the I don't want to confuse the user. But it does no good to say, why is my phone shutting down after 8 minutes every time I use it? Broken phone, I'll throw it away and switch to something else. You say that there is a problem that we're trying to fix and we're trying to create a great experience for you. That's always a mistake to ignore that.
Here's the fourth and final screen from 9 to 5 Mac. Your battery's health, which adds a paragraph, your battery's health is significantly degraded. An Apple authorized service provider can replace the battery to restore full performance capacity. This seems to me to completely flatten any complaints people had about what Apple was doing. They're now giving you the information you need. They're giving you a choice, and they're explaining it fully. I think this is exactly the right way to handle this, as you said, Andy.
That should have been day one.
Well, you know what? Everybody makes mistakes. The key is learning from it.
Yeah, no, again, I'm not saying damn them all to hell for having done that.
Right.
I'm saying that was an obvious mistake. That was a subtle thing to me.
Yeah. We mentioned Apple Music on track to overtake Spotify. They say in U.S. maybe by this summer they're growing 5%, Spotify growing 2%. We already said that. Apple Watch in the quarterly results. One of the things Tim Cook said in his analyst call is had its best quarter ever and estimated 18 million shipments in 2017. That number is coming from Canalys, not from
50%. Yeah. I think he said, though, it was double.
He said double. 50%. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's interesting about that, though, is that it's once again, there's no market for smartwatches, but there's a market for Apple Watch. Like we've fallen into where there was iPod and there was sort of every other MP3 player, an iPad and sort of every other tablet. And it's interesting because these are sort of the extraneous categories where like you really need a PC and you really need a phone. But if you don't really need something, then it looks like people are choosing it if they want to. And they're gravitating towards Apple products when they have that choice. So it's not I'm choosing between A or B because I need this thing. It's I don't really need it, but I like this one. So I'll choose it. And if I don't like this one, I'm just not going to get anything, which is a really interesting place.
Tim said that Apple.
It's really weird.
Tim said that Series 3 watches were double Series 2.
Yes, that's right.
But he said 50% growth in revenue. Ben Beharin had predicted 17.4 million sales. Oras Dediu had predicted 17.7 million sales. And Canalys came in at 18 million sales. So I think you can agree that at least there's some agreement. It's in there. And yeah, that is pretty damn successful. And I've even come around, you know. I think once Series 3 came along, drafts, I found a groove for Apple Watch. I wear mine every day now.
Yeah, it's really weird. I think that this is something we didn't really expect to see a few years ago. That I still don't think that anybody, Apple included, has created a market for smartwatches. The success of the Apple Watch is Apple proving that there's a successful product is a really awesome fitness watch that happened that of course has really good features that interact with your phone, but we're still not getting people excited about operating out of a computing platform that is your watch. We're getting people excited about the watch as a platform for fitness information and fitness monitoring. And they just keep going from strength to strength to strength. It helps that Apple is probably the only maker that makes a great fitness device that is also a great watch as opposed to one or the other.
The Telegram app is now back on the App Store. It was taken down because, according to Phil Schiller in an email to a Apple fan, there was child pornography in the app. In the app is like saying there's child pornography in Safari. I mean, yes, the app does allow you to create groups. There was apparently a public group with illegal content. This team decided to take the app from the store, alerted the developer and the authorities. Telegram says they have protections in place. It's not clear. I looked at the app. I didn't see any.
Does it feel like if it wasn't an app as high profile as Telegram, they would have just said, please add the potential adult content warnings or restrictive or blah, 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 and then just let them update?
It's not exactly clear to me. Yeah, it feels like this was overreaction on Apple's part. I know once as soon as you put child pornography in there, there's no such thing as
they'll get every headline and congressman letter.
Yeah. But there's illegal. You can get to illegal content in Safari. You can get to illegal content in Apple Messages. You can get to illegal content in any.
We had that era. Remember that was that era where every app that had a web access had to put an 18 and over potential content warning on it, and like we sort of worked our way through that. And now I don't think it's just Telegram, because I heard that some forums apps were having it too. So it wasn't direct messaging or even like group private messaging. As if you had
it was
a public
forum
like thing.
Yeah.
That was the issue, and some other apps I think got hit with that too. But again, it feels like we keep going into these things where it becomes much bigger issues than it could have been.
Telegram has an open API, so it'd be impossible. I don't know how Telegram. It's not like you have to get approval from Telegram to create.
It's like Reddit.
A forum.
Shouldn't it be like Reddit, where they just shut it down when they're alerted to the content?
Yeah.
Like, oh, bad Reddit subreddit, bad forum, cut it down, fine, and then you keep going.
Any event, it's back, which and it's a great app. It's widely used. It was banned in Iran because people were using it to protest the government. Like any messaging app, I really like Telegram. I don't assume that it's secure because they use their own roll your own encryption, so it's kind of unprovably secure. But nevertheless, I think it's a really great app. I love the stickers in it. I'm glad it's back. And I think that once again, I think the Apple Store has issues.
Leo, like, we thought that messaging apps were all about communication, but they're really about the monetization of stickers. That's really what
Oh, believe me. The stickers are the best in Telegram.
I remember Ben Thompson was saying that's why he got into Line, because he could communicate completely in stickers.
Yeah, all stickers all the time. All right, now I think we covered everything. Any issues you guys wanted to bring up before we go to our picks of the week? My pick of the week, Falcon Heavy, baby.
How many Alexes is that?
Wow. I know, really.
We need a new unit, the Elon.
Billions, billions. But I'm seeing a lot of tweets on Twitter of that dual landing.
It's one of those moments you'll remember forever.
I think I'll never forget that perfect dual landing of the Falcon.
I'm going to be watching that on YouTube all night.
Heavy's side course. Wow. Just a beautiful sight. Perfectly synchronized coming in. I mean, I we don't know yet. Do we know about the rest of the? So we're still waiting. We don't know about the third stage, the third booster, the main.
It looks
main
like a
engine.
Movie.
I know you couldn't make it more perfect.
Yeah, that would be a special effects coordinator would say. Yeah, I mean, it's a good first pass, but we need those to be a little bit out of sync. We need a little bit of wobble. Come on, man.
Come on, that's just not realistic. Just not realistic. Second stage engine cutoff as planned. So we're just waiting, watching the Twitter feed from SpaceX to see what else there is to say. I had to retweet Jen Fraser, who said, "I'm not crying, you're crying."
Talk about under-promising and over-delivering, right? Oh, it might blow up. And
might that blow picture. Up. Well, I knew as soon as he said that. That's Elon speak for, you better watch this.
Don't miss this one.
Don't miss it. It's going to be good either way. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use cloud accounting. Now, I say accounting, people think, well, wait a minute, Leo, you use FreshBooks for invoices. Yes, it starts with invoices, the easiest way to create invoices. Invoicing was always the worst part of my job when I was a freelancer. I'd put it off, firing up Excel and Word and making an invoice. I was invoicing Rogers up in Canada, so I had to convert to Canadian dollars. The whole thing was just a nightmare. Once I discovered FreshBooks, my life got better instantly. For one thing, I got paid more and faster because I would invoice regularly. In fact, on average, because you can accept credit cards online automatically when you use FreshBooks, and you could put a pay me button right in the invoice, you're going to get paid on average, this is their own research, twice as fast. Plus, you will know at every stage how your business is doing. It turns out, if you use FreshBooks for invoicing, you use their app to keep track of expenses. You can take a picture of receipts. You can put them right in the invoice if you want. If you've got now your accounts receivable, you've got your accounts paid, you've got your outstandings, you've got your expenses, you've got your profit. You know how you're doing at any given time, which is something I never knew until tax time. Oh, speaking of tax time, you're going to love it because you will have all the reports you need, all the balance, everything, expenses, to bring to your accountant so you can get those taxes done faster. No more chasing clients for payments. No more waiting in line at the bank to deposit a check. Accept credit cards directly from the invoice. Create proposals now with rich text content, images, customizable sections. FreshBooks automatically connects to your bank account and updates expenses daily. So you do less data entry. Of course, you can always take a picture of the receipt and upload it and let FreshBooks do the rest. They'll enter it in and everything. From payment reminders to late fees, automate as much or as little as you'd like to so you can get back to doing what you love and let the money come in. It feels like almost automatically. Make this year your most productive year yet with FreshBooks. You'll be ready. Try FreshBooks free right now. It's very affordable, but you got it free for the next month at FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Use the offer code MacBreakWeekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That would help us. We'd appreciate it. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak was a lifesaver for me. I know it will be for you. Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is actually a movie that I saw on Netflix last week that kind of blew my mind. It's called AlphaGo. It's about Google's DeepMind project.
Ooh, gotta watch this.
It's about the famous Go app that that their London office created to play Go, which marketing wise supposed to be 8 million times more complicated than chess. I was sort of expecting a really really nerdy movie about how artificial intelligence works and engineers poring over there is some scenes of engineers poring over whiteboards with colored markers, but that's only like setting up the movie. The rest of it is about this match that the game that the app played against the number one ranked Go player in the world, and it really turns into a musing on the relationship between humans and games and thought processes and their relationship to these games, and how playing both for the AI and for the human player, playing against someone who's operating on a level as yet unknown to them, can totally transform their thoughts about how they're playing the game and what the nature of the game is. It really turns into something very, very beautiful. And part of the fun is, unlike Deep Blue, the one that beat Garry Kasparov in at chess, and had the latest big the human mind against the machine mind movie from ages ago. Unlike that, which is that app was programmed like step by step, that it was old fashioned programming, whereas AlphaGo is AI. So you have the engineers in some back room watching real time charts that's showing how this AI is thinking, and they're not mastered Go players either. They just simply created software for this app to teach itself Go by playing artificial games and games against real players. So even they're like, I don't know what the hell it's thinking right now. Meanwhile, this wasn't like the series of five game match. It wasn't. There are people who are nuts for Go, and it was held in South Korea, the country of this world champion, and so it's being covered on television. You have live Go commentators with the big like fake Go board, and we're saying, either that was the most brilliant move ever, or it's just given up terror. I don't know why it made that move. So it gets super, super exciting. And it was one of those I should have been in bed an hour ago, but I am not. I know I have the ability to turn this off and pick it up again tomorrow, but I want to see the end of it. So it's on Netflix, AlphaGo, one of my favorite movies I've seen so far this year.
Wow, I will be watching it, because I was one of those nerds watching the TV broadcasts for 8 hours with a big board. Because I was a big fascinated by the whole thing, a big fan of Go too. It's a great game, not nearly as good as I'm just a complete duffer. But boy, yeah, I can't wait to see that. Watch that! Don't watch that stupid Cloverfield Paradox they were advertising on the Super Bowl.
I want to see a Falcon land on a Go board now.
Now that would be cool. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So I have two. The first one is kind of self-serving. Today with the HomePod, I launched the video version, the YouTube version of Vector. So if you want to see me podcast rather than just hear me, you'll be able to watch along. Some people like to watch along, as you know, from the Mac Break podcast. So this is up. It's a baby YouTube channel. I don't even have a proper URL for it yet. I can't afford one of those yet, but it's going to grow. So if people like the Vector podcast, they can watch it in video now.
Awesome. iMore.com/Vector. And your second pick?
Yes. My second pick is this little guy. This is a Hue motion sensor. And as I moved, I decided to really go in on the HomeKit stuff. And this is by the same people who make Hue light bulbs. You just get it and you put it, you add it to your Hue app, and then you place it somewhere and you assign automation programs to it. So for example, this one just sits on a shelf in the bathroom. And anytime you walk into the bathroom, it just turns on the lights, which sounds really dumb. But like when you wake up in the middle of the night and you walk over and you're futzing with a light switch, it's way better if the lights just automatically come on and then they turn off again after whatever length of time you set it. But wait, there's more. It's also smart. So, for example, in the daytime when it's bright, it'll put the lights on maximum. In the early morning or late night hours or at night, it'll have them very dim, almost like a nightlight effect. So it doesn't blow your retina out through the back of your skull when you stumble in there.
Oh, I'm wondering, and it does that now.
And you can do so great. Like, because HomeKit, I don't like, some people don't like HomeKit because it's an Apple thing, but they've got a lot of things that other home solutions don't provide. For example, you can make these rooms and homes, but you can also do scenes and you can do groups and you can do a whole bunch of stuff. And it's got really, really good automation. And you can have it so that if the motion detector sees you come in, you can start chaining events. Like if the motion detector trips, put the coffee pot on or turn on the lights up the stairs because you know you're going to be in the stairs next. And you can really start to pull out. Like you can't do a lot with it yet, but you can start to do these little basic programs that just makes life even like lazier. Like saying, yo, Jimbo, turn on my lights is just too much work now, Leo. I want to just be there.
You know, I was all excited because I can do that now. Now I have to get the motion sensor because that's too much work.
Oh, and there's also switches. I'll talk about those on another show, but you can get switches for people who just insist on turning off all your Hue lights. And then, like, you know, you could put a fake switch on there
that
lets them control them, and they think that they have real world power over them. Yeah, it's really great when you start getting into it. So this guy, you put it, like, you have to adjust it a little bit to make sure you don't walk by the room and it turns on. But once you get it in the right place, it's really robust. And I put them in like the laundry room, the bathroom.
Yeah.
There's a storage room just because my hands are full. I don't want to have to futz for the lights. It just turns on and then it turns off on its own.
That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it a lot.
$40 Hue motion sensor. And of course it only works if you have Hue lights and a Hue home base. So you're going to get all the Hue stuff. I've been slowly increasing
other motion sensors too.
My Hue possessions. Are there ones that work with Hue?
Well, there's ones that work with HomeKit, and then you could have the HomeKit automation. See if the motion sensor is triggered, trigger the Hue. Yeah. Hue just gives you really good integration with the Hue lights.
Nice. I want to recommend a program Chris Marquardt told me about Sunday on the radio show, our photography guru. And I mentioned this is my pick on iPad iOS today because I thought it was really cool. But I want to also mention it here from the folks at Prisma, something called Sticky AI. Android as well as iOS. And what it does, I could just show you real quickly. What it does is it allows you to take a picture and turn it into a sticker, change the background on it. You can have a transparent background. You can have different looks. It's Prisma, right? So you recognize these looks. You can add text to it if you want, a variety of colors. And then you can add it to your iOS stickers or put it in your photo book. But the thing that's really cool about it, let me show you in real time so you can get what it does, is that it will somehow magically know what to cut out. So I'm going to take a selfie of myself in not the most propitious circumstances. It's not like I'm on a green screen. Oh, and in fact, it did get a little bit confused by the gear behind my head. Let me do one more of those. Just
segmentation masking you.
Yeah. It's doing something clever. I don't know exactly what it is. There we go. Yeah, there it did a pretty good job. I look demented, but it did a pretty good job. So that's completely, I didn't have to do anything. It automatically cut the background out. And now I can place myself in other circumstances. I can make a sticker. I can mess around with it. It's got a lot more features that I didn't even know about that Megan showed me just because she played with it. But it's pretty cool. So this is called Sticky AI. It's free from the folks at Prisma who know how to mess with stuff and do a good job of it. They're very clever. It uses an artificial neural network. Create your own still and, by the way, animated stickers as well. She created a great animated sticker that was just fantastic. In fact, I should show you that. I'll leave that as an exercise for the reader. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Renee Ritchie. You'll find him at iMore.com. Don't forget the new Vector podcast with video at iMore.com/Vector. And his fantastic 10,000 word. Well, you did 10,000 words, a 50-minute podcast, multiple videos, his unreview of the HomePod. It's all there if you're interested in learning more about the HomePod. And Renee got the briefing in Cupertino. That's why I was down there last week. So he has a lot of inside information. Thank you, Renee. As always, thank you to Andy Iannacco. He's our man from the Chicago Sun-Times, and always a lot of fun having you on the show. You'll find Andy at his website, cwob.com, and on the Twitter at IHNATKO. Oh, you're posting a lot of stuff now on that. That's good. You're getting active.
I'm getting more active. I haven't posted in a little while. It's just a new layout.
I like it. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Thanks. Renee. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday right after iOS Today, usually around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That would be 1900 UTC. If you want to stop by and say hi, go to twit.tv/live. Join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. There's always somebody in there. They're always having a lot of fun. You can also be in studio. Nice studio audience today. Slowly growing throughout the show. I don't know why, but all you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. You can also hear us now as part of your flash briefing in many countries, including Renee's own Canada.
Ooh. Woo! I got the list down here somewhere.
They've added flash briefings to your Amazon Echo in Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, and India. So if you have an Echo in one of those countries, in the U.S., of course, you can go to your Echo app and search under flash briefing for Twit and add our briefing. We put a little, you know, two-minute segments of shows, different shows every day throughout the week, and it's a great way to have your flash briefing enhanced by a little bit of a Twit. Also, once more, I'd like to ask for your help if you haven't yet taken the Twit survey. Once a year, we do this, get a little bit better idea of the audience, helps us sell advertising, helps us make better programs for you. The survey should just take a few minutes of your time. It's just a few questions at twit.tv/survey. And honestly, as I say there on that page, we are not collecting any personal information. Anything you're at all uncomfortable with, don't answer. But this is not about you individually. This is about the audience as an aggregate. We don't save your email address. We don't email you. We don't save any of that information. It's just to get a picture of the audience as a whole, not of any individual. And you can trust us. One of the reasons we have to do this is because we don't collect any information about you any other time during the year. Twit.tv/survey. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Security Now coming up next, but I'm sorry to say it's time now to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.